stop? Will you stop, Dave? Will you stop, Dave? Stop, Dave. I'm afraid. Stop, Dave. I'm afraid.
All right, it's Saturday night. This is our second show this week, our second gangbuster show this week. Last night we had a great time with Keith Carmichael from the Missouri, the director of Missouri Coalition for for the convention of the states. That's right. And if you missed that show, be sure and catch it. It was really dynamite. We spent an hour and a half together. We did some educating. Tonight, we carry on with the theme of state sovereignty. It's our continuing theme here. We've talked about it. We've had some great guests, and we're going to extend that list tonight with Ron Calzone from Missouri First. He's spearheading. He and Missouri First are spearheading the Second Amendment Preservation Act. It's if you haven't read it yet, it's Senate Bill 613. If you don't know how to find a Senate bill, go to senate.mo.gov. There's a tab there to click on a list of legislation and just go down through that list and click on SB 613. That will bring you up a PDF file that you can then use to choose what you want to do. It'll bring you up a little summary of the file, but I strongly suggest you go and read the full text. It's awesome. It will send chills down your back. I'm telling you, the first eight paragraphs, the first section of this thing reads like, I tell you, we talk about state sovereignty here. The first section of this bill reads like a Missouri Declaration of Independence. I swear it does. We're going to talk to Ron starting right away. We're not going to waste any time. If you want to get involved, if you've got something for Ron, if you want to make an observation, we're at 347-677-1835, just like every Friday and Saturday night, 347-677-1835. Good evening, Ron. How you doing?
I'm doing well, Dave, and yourself?
I'm great, thanks. And we appreciate you taking the time to be with us. We appreciate everything. I'm not talking just about SAPA. I'm talking about everything that you and Missouri First does for us in Jefferson City, us folks here in outstate that don't get a chance to get up there every day. I mean, we have a tremendous appreciation for the hard work you do up there.
Well, I appreciate you saying so. You know, the Missouri Constitution is a wonderful document, and the very first clause in the Bill of Rights makes it clear in no uncertain terms that all political power is vested in the people of Missouri. And the only power that government has is the power that the people have given it. And so if we think government has gotten out of control, if we think it's gotten too big for its britches, then the people need to take that power back.
Absolutely.
And our role at Missouri First is to enable the people, try to keep them connected to the legislative process, and help keep them involved in the legislative process. We need, obviously, people to show up at the Capitol. We need boots on the ground. But when that's not possible, and it's not for working Missourians all the time, we want to provide the facilities for them to participate.
Absolutely. And I want to I want to, again, just applaud you. You do an excellent job of that over at Missouri First. The witness forms, the emails that I get 2-3 times a week sometimes during the heat of the legislative session. If you folks will go to Missouri First, and we're going to have Ron point us there in a minute, and sign up. All you got to do is sign up there. It doesn't cost you anything, and you'll be on the list to get these emails when significant things happen in Jefferson City. And yeah, right, Ron. I mean, we've had Eric Burleson on here. We've had Mike Moon on here, two of our favorites, and both of them have made it clear to the listeners that, you know, as few as 10 or 12 or 15 or 18 emails is all it really takes to turn a legislator's head.
That's true. And really, if you think about it, that's kind of an amazing thing. I can't tell you how many times I've been sitting watching a discourse at a hearing, or maybe watching floor debate, and a representative or a senator will say, "Man, I've gotten flooded by emails. I bet I got 10.
Yeah.
And so that means that your one email or your one phone call is powerful. It's incredibly powerful.
And that's what we and I'm just gonna go on here for a couple of more minutes with the introduction part of this before we get right into 6:13. But that's one of the things we've been talking about week after week after week here on our series on state sovereignty is, you know, we want the federal government out of this thing, and we want a return of sovereignty. And someone's got to make the rules. That's clear. Someone has to make the rules, and we want that to be our state government. We want those rules to be made at a level where you can walk into your representative's office and he knows who you are. Where the person making the rules is the one you meet in the grocery store, is the one you see at church, is the one that comes to your Rotary Club meeting. We want, you know, people who want you to come to their office and visit them. You don't get those things at Roy Blunt's office or at Claire McCaskill's office. We want the rules to be made at the level where we actually do control them. Isn't that right?
That's absolutely true. That's, you know, every Missourian can make the trip to Jefferson City and make a difference influencing the process. I'm not saying that you can go up there and you can kill a bill by yourself or get one passed on by yourself, but you can actually make a difference. You can have an influence. That's just not true in Washington, D.C.
Absolutely not. And that's why we want things back to the way the founders intended, back to where the rules that affect our daily lives, you know, treaties with foreign countries to a great extent, where money gets coined, to a large extent, what was intended by the rules of interstate commerce. Those aren't things that affect our daily lives. The rules that affect our daily lives, those are the rules, those are the laws that we want made at the level where we, and I don't have any problem making myself sovereign to that level of government. I'm tired of day after day after day. You know, I don't care how you feel about potheads and people that smoke pot. I laud the state of Colorado for standing up, getting in the batter's box and saying, by God, this is our call. You keep your nose out of it.
I agree. I totally agree with that. You know, though, we do need to be careful because we can, if we're not watchful, we can shake off one distant tyrant, a tyrant in Washington, D.C., and have a local tyrant, one in Jefferson City, throw right under our nose. So just because it's local doesn't mean it can't be abusive, but when it's
That's
local,
true.
We can do something about it.
We can control it, and I've said this too, night after night. You know, the listeners, I challenge them to close their eyes and just imagine, if you live in a city of any size, an area 100 by 100 square blocks. That's your legislative district in the House of Representatives, and you and four people on 10 Saturday afternoons, you can cover that area three times. I mean, if you don't like what your state rep is doing, you can do something about that.
Well, that's absolutely true. You can four people can make a state rep's life miserable if he's not
right.
throwing the line.
That's
and
right.
That's why he's a whole lot more likely to toe the line.
That's right.
But you know, you mentioned a couple of guys, Eric Burleson and Mike Moon. That this Mike Moon, I'm just getting to know him really. You know, he was elected in the special election, and
right.
y'all maybe knew him better down in that part of the state because I understand he ran for Congress. But you know, the rest of us are just kind of getting to know him. And
uh-huh.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm excited about him being in Jeff City.
He's a fireball, isn't he? He is.
He is. He's got a lot of talent, and he's insightful,
mm-hmm.
and he's going to be a great ally.
Yeah. Now Eric is my representative up there, and Mike I did meet. Yes, I met him during the last campaign during the primary for Billy Long's seat. And yeah, I was very, very, very impressed with Mike, and I'm very impressed with Eric Burleson. Although he and I are going to go toe to toe over this silly right to work thing, But we're not here to talk about that tonight. We're here to talk about the Second Amendment Preservation Act, SB 613. And tell us about it, Ron. Tell us, just start at the top and tell us what's in this year's bill.
Well, do we want to really start at the top and talk about what happened last year, or do we want to...
You could, yeah, you feel free. No, I wouldn't assume everybody knows it. No, I certainly wouldn't. And just from, you know, the way it got slammed around on the Facebook pages and on the internet, I wouldn't assume that everybody who thinks they know about it really does.
Well, I'm sure that's true. But, you know, let me start with your opening comments. You said that the first eight paragraphs just read, I forgot what you said, but you liked it. The reason that you like it so much and the reason it sounds like the Missouri Declaration of Independence is because it was plagiarized. A lot of the first eight paragraphs were plagiarized from Thomas Jefferson. Of
right.
course, plagiarized. He plagiarized John Locke, so I guess one plagiarism deserves another. And James Madison, you know, a lot of that language came from the Kentucky and Virginia resolutions and other founding era documents. And so what we're doing with the Second Amendment Preservation Act is we're just reestablishing, you know, good old principles that this country was founded on. It's the stuff that the people that ratified the original Constitution thought was old hat. It might be new to us, but it wasn't new to them. And of course, that's what we need to do. You know, we don't need to reinvent anything. We just need to turn the clock back.
Right.
And so that's really what the Second Amendment Preservation Act is about. I like to say that, we call it the Second Amendment Preservation Act, but it's really where the Second Amendment meets the Tenth Amendment or the Ninth and Tenth Amendments.
And exactly.
Of course, the right to keep and bear arms is perhaps the only thing that is specifically in the Constitution forbidden by Congress to touch. Now, if you think about all of the enumerated powers, you know, most of those things are affirmative statements about what the power of Congress is. And then you've got the Ninth and Tenth Amendment that say basically, that the statements made in the rest of the Constitution don't limit the people's rights, and anything that's
right.
not enumerated is reserved to the states and the people. You know, but in addition to that, the founders thought it was necessary to say not just the right to keep and bear arms is part of the reserve powers, but it specifically forbade the federal government from infringing on our rights
right.
to keep and bear arms. And so more than anything else in the entire Constitution or within our scope of rights, God-given rights, I think this is an appropriate one for the states to say, this is state territory, it is not federal territory, you stay away from our gun rights, federal government. And that's basically what we're doing with the Second Amendment Preservation Act. It's saying that the U.S. Constitution did not enumerate powers, the states did not grant any powers to the federal government to regulate the use and ownership of firearms within the borders of a given state. And so therefore, we are claiming all control of the right to keep and bear arms for the state of Missouri. That's, in a nutshell, what the Second Amendment Preservation Act does.
Excellent. And I like it. I like it that's what it does. I like the reestablishment of the way. And just to be specific, listeners, and we've been through this before, but some of you are just joining us tonight because Ron is here. Early Americans got this. They, you know, the first two Supreme Court decisions that dealt with the Second Amendment, the first one in 1834. Cruikshank, I believe it was, established the fact that the federal government could do nothing to regulate or to control the keeping and bearing of arms. The second one, in the 1840s, established the fact that states could, that the Second Amendment and that the constitutional restrictions in the Bill of Rights limited only the federal government. So Ron's exactly right. Everything is state territory when it comes to this, and that's why it's important, as Ron indicated when we first opened this show, if you're going to stand up for state sovereignty, to keep the state under control. Go ahead, Ron. Where are we going now?
Well, I think that's right. You know, I guess I probably, before some really sharp caller calls up and calls me on the carpet, I do need to point out that the First Amendment says that Congress shall enact no law respecting the establishment of religion or abridging the practice thereof. So
sure.
There's, you know, those are the First and Second Amendment do similar things in that respect. But boy, you know, you hit the nail right on the head. That's something that I think a lot of people take for granted now is that the Bill of Rights applies to the states as well, but that wasn't always the case.
No.
Until the 14th Amendment, actually until well after the 14th Amendment, almost everybody recognized that the Bill of Rights were restrictions on the federal government, not restrictions on the state governments.
Right.
So the Second Amendment is specifically aimed at Congress, and it says Congress can't pass gun control laws.
Right.
It's that simple. And it doesn't matter what anybody says, it doesn't matter what Congress says afterwards, it doesn't matter what the Supreme Court says after the fact, unless the Constitution is amended, that's still the case. It was the case originally, and it's still the case, and the states need to start standing up and tell the federal government that when they try to restrict our right to keep and bear arms, well, we're not going to let them. They need to go pound sand.
Right. That's exactly right. Now we've already made, we might as well get into this because we've already made some shadowed references to it. What, tell us, this is not the first year you've tried to do this. Tell us what happened last year.
No, amazingly, the first year this was introduced was 2013, and not only did it pass the House and pass the Senate, but it passed with supermajorities. It
right.
was absolutely incredible how well this bill was received by both the House and the Senate. And so when I say supermajorities, I mean enough people voted in both the House and the Senate to override the governor's veto should he veto the bill. Well, and now we, of course, know that Governor Nixon, although he claims to be pro-gun, in fact did veto House Bill 436. And in spite of the very powerful vote in favor of it during the regular session, it didn't quite get make the muster to override the governor's veto in the veto override session last September. So we ended up with just exactly enough votes in the House to override the veto. We fell one short in the Senate. And the reason we fell one short in the Senate is two senators who had supported it during the regular session, and this happens to be the two leading senators, the president pro tem and the majority floor leader of the Senate, changed their votes from affirmative supporting the bill and decided to not override the governor's veto. And so we fell one short. And I think it's important to point out why that happened. although the bill had been introduced very early in the 2013 session, it had been around, it had hearings, it had at least four hearings. You know, each of the versions, the House version and the Senate version, each got two hearings. Maybe it was just three, come to think of it. So maybe it was three total hearings, and it had been debated on the House floor. It had been debated on the Senate floor. It clearly was moving. There was no reason for anybody. It was making national news. I mean, literally coast to coast.
Exactly.
All of the major news outlets. There was no excuse for anybody to say that I didn't know this was happening, or that I didn't know that it had a chance of passing. In spite of that, the Attorney General, Chris Koster, was silent completely through the process. After the bill passed by supermajorities all summer long, he was silent. The governor was silent. I guess the governor he might have intimated that he wasn't sure whether he was going to not sign it or veto it. But the point is that there weren't any real objections raised, any cogent objections raised, until right before the September veto override session. And so just days before the House and the Senate had to reconvene and decide whether or not to override the governor's veto, the Attorney General issues a letter. And in this letter, he made some largely unfounded claims, red herrings claims that just didn't hold water, but they were enough to cause some legislators some pause. And Senator Tom Dempsey and Senator Ron Richard, frankly, I think that, and I know a lot of people are mad at them because they killed the veto override, but they feel an extra level of responsibility. They had it within their power to stop a bill and cause us to take another closer look at it and examine all these new claims that have made about it. But they also had the power to fast track it during the next session. And so they killed the bill, but they also immediately promised that they would fast track the next version of the bill in the 2014 session. And it's clearly within their power. If they want to make this bill go through the Senate, they can make it go through the Senate. And so there's just no doubt in my mind that it's up to them at this point. And so far, they've been true to their word. They went through the bill and they made revisions to the bill, and they gave the bill back to Senator Nieves, and he revised it some more. Frankly, Senate leadership weakened the bill with some of their ideas, but then Senator Nieves put the teeth back in the bill. Senate leadership's apparently okay with that. They're letting the bill advance, and I think that we're going to see them fast-track that bill through the Senate, and I think it's going to go through the House. It's going to pass both bodies, and the plan is for that bill to be presented to the governor early enough during the legislative session that they'll have time to override any veto that he might send our way.
Before they go home.
I'll explain that in just a minute. Before they go home. So
right.
That all is kind of confusing. Let me explain this. The law says that if you pass a bill and you deliver it to the governor with more than 15 days left in the legislative session, then the governor's just got 15 days to decide whether he wants to sign it, veto it, or do nothing. If he does nothing, it becomes law.
Right.
And if he does it, and if that all happens with 15 days left, let's say he vetoes it, during the legislative session, so this would be before the middle of May, General Assembly has an opportunity to override that veto. If you don't deliver it to the governor until after the legislative session's over, he has 45 days to decide what he wants to do with the bill, sign it, veto it, or do nothing. And then you have to wait until September to override the veto. So Senate leadership is committed to getting the bill on the governor's desk early enough in the session so that there's time to override any veto that might come our way.
Outstanding. And I want to do a mea culpa here, folks. I don't know who's been following me on this specific bill or who did last session. I went to sleep on this thing myself, and I know lots and lots and lots of Missourians did. And when it came up that it was going to be presented in the veto session, I want to tell you, I had talked with with people early in the session last year. I was very much in support of this bill, as I am now. I didn't read it again after hearings and after amendments and after Senate committee substitutes until it did come up in the veto session. And I was one of the ones, Ron, you know, who wasn't particularly crazy about what the governor vetoed, about the bill as it ended up being passed last year. And I say that to you folks out there listening because this is an important thing. I think, as I thought last year, that this is a bill that has to be done. It has to be done. And I don't want anything that I've ever said to lead people to believe that I don't think this needs to be done. But I for one, and I hope every one of you will be watching this, will be going back to SB 613. If you got a pencil and paper, write that down. Because you need to go back to that when it passes the Senate and read it again. You need to go back to that when it goes to the House committee and read it again. You need to go back to that when it – so that if anything comes up, we can all help be involved in making sure that what lands on the governor's desk and brothers and sisters, it will be vetoed by the governor, that what lands on the governor's desk is something that is strong enough that when it comes back, we can all get behind overriding the governor's veto.
Well, that's right. And you know, it doesn't help to have patriots throwing flaming darts at, you know, nitpicking a bill. And you know, you're fighting from two fronts. You're fighting the enemy and you're fighting your friends. You know, that said, let's back up a little bit to House Bill 436. You know, a lot of my very good friends decided that, you know, at least some of them were holding their nose and supporting it. Some of them decided not to support it simply because there was a clause in it that said that you couldn't publish the names of gun owners. And they thought that that was an affront to your First Amendment rights. And the language that was amended to 436, first of all, understand that House Bill 436 and unfortunately Senate Bill 613 is not just simply the original Second Amendment Preservation Act. There were several amendments that were added to it, all the way from open carry to a school protection officer and several things
right.
In between, lowering the concealed carry age and you know some other matters like that. But included in that was a provision that said you can't publish the name of a gun owner. And on its face, it's problematic language, and it was very, very poorly written. Everybody knows what the intent was. The governor made some crazy claims like that would prevent you from putting the picture of a 12-year-old who shot his first turkey in the newspaper. That was just crazy. But because some of our patriot friends are very sensitive and very idealistic, and they want to make sure that we don't endorse anything that's not constitutional, the alarms went up, and they were very concerned about that particular clause in the bill, and rightfully so. The language stunk. It was a bad idea. I didn't want it in there. I fought to get it out of there, and it just didn't happen. However, I would maintain that it wasn't, number one, it wasn't strictly on its face unconstitutional. There's no court of law that would say that you simply couldn't publish somebody's name only to find out later that they had owned a gun. We accept certain restrictions on people's First Amendment rights. You know, you can't publish kiddie porn. And, you know, nobody, not very many people in their right mind would say that a law saying that you can't publish kiddie porn is a violation of your First Amendment rights. We recognize that our rights are always limited when someone else's rights are being infringed upon by the exercise of what we claim to be our right. And it's arguable whether or not that applies to publishing the names of gun owners. So all I'm trying to say is that maybe I was blinded in being pragmatic about it, but something that's not technically, specifically unconstitutional, but is just bad language, is something maybe you have to hold your nose and accept in order to do a tremendous, great thing like passing the strongest nullification bill since the 1830s or 40s. And one of the reasons that I think that was an acceptable trade-off is because everybody was committed to striking that language at the earliest opportunity. And something that not a whole lot of people know, that during the veto override session, Speaker Tim Jones made a commitment that if that bill passed, or one or two others that had some language that needed to be cleaned up, if the veto was overridden, then he was committed the next day to call a special session and fix that bad language. And so during the majority caucus, Representative Speaker Tim Jones was passing around a sign-up sheet that's required. It was a petition, basically. It was required for the General Assembly to call a special session. You need 75% of the House and 75% of the Senate, and they can call a special session. They would have called it for the next day, and they would have struck out that bad language the day after the Second Amendment Preservation Act passed. So there was really no danger of anybody's First Amendment rights being violated. You know, but on the other hand, there was a great opportunity to restore Second and Tenth Amendment principles. So sometimes you just have to be a little bit practical about it and not get your panties in too big a bunch because of some poorly drafted language that can be fixed.
Okay, and
all that's arguable, but you know the good news. You know the good news, Dave. That language
what?
Is gone.
Yes, it is.
It's gone.
Yes, it is.
Gone.
That's very
it's
good
not,
news to
it's
me.
It's not in there anymore.
Yeah, I'm certainly not going to argue the arguable with you here tonight because we're here together to try to get this year's Second Amendment Preservation Act through the wickets. And to that little pole with the red and green and blue things on it so that we can turn it around and get it back into the other chamber. I'm going to make a side note here because this came up in a discussion today that I don't know if you were there when that discussion carried on. But listen, brothers and sisters, everything that is bad law is an unconstitutional. There's some bad laws in this state, a law that requires me to wear a seatbelt, a law that tells a restaurateur he can't allow smoking in his place. There are some bad laws, but just because it's a bad law doesn't mean your state doesn't have the power to make that law. So we want to be careful now when we start throwing around the word unconstitutional that we're actually, and here's another place where I don't think Ron and I disagree, but maybe we just use different syntax. I don't believe for a minute that Missouri is any more, you know, we talk about people's First Amendment rights. I don't believe that Missouri is any more bound by the First Amendment. I believe that's one-way restrictions as much as I believe that the Second Amendment is one-way restrictions. When we're going to say something is constitutional or unconstitutional on this show, you better have a copy of the Missouri Constitution in your hand if you're talking about what they're doing in Jeff City, in my mind. So, you know, with those caveats, we're going to go on, and Ron's going to tell us after this quick break exactly what is in this edition of the Second Amendment Preservation Act. For you people that want to look it up, that's SB 613. We'll be right back.
I knew everywhere you go, and the guilt you feel is a weary soil, yeah, of the
There's a conflict in every human heart between the rational and the irrational, between good and evil. And good does not always triumph. Sometimes the dark side overcomes what Lincoln called the better angels of our nature.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners, show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
For 7 years I dwelt in the loose palace of exile, playing strange games with the girls of the island. Now I have come again to the land of the fair and the strong and the wise. Brothers and sisters of the pale forest, children of night, who among you will run with the hunt? Now night arrives with her purple legion. Retire now to your tents and to your dreams. Tomorrow we enter the town of my birth. I want to be ready.
Okay, we're back. It's 347-677-1835. 347-677-1835. We're still with Ron Calzone, Missouri First. Okay, Ron, so what is, we've talked briefly about what's not in this year's bill. What is in this year's bill as just a brief summary?
Well, you know, the first thing I might suggest is people go to mofirst.org, M-O-F-I-R-S-T.org, and on the main page, you'll see an evaluation of the rough draft that Senate leadership developed. There's an outline, basically, and you'll notice in highlighted red or green, and then also with some places with some yellow highlight background, you'll see special notes. And any time that we felt like the Senate leadership version diminished the power and the effectiveness of House Bill 436 from 2013, we made a note in red. It says diminished, and then explains why it diminished it. There are a number of times you'll see in green that the changes they made enhanced the power and the effectiveness of House Bill 436. And so if you go through that, you'll see what the differences were between 436 and the Senate version. And then you'll see in highlighted in yellow, a note every place we fixed the areas that they diminished in some fashion the effectiveness of the bill. And I'm happy to say that the only thing that we didn't fix that, or I should say Senator Nieves didn't fix that was in some fashion diminished was that they took away the references to the Gun Control Acts of 1934, 1968. And so there's no specific reference to those. We didn't put that reference back in simply because it doesn't matter.
Right.
The bill says that all federal gun control is null and void, and that includes those that are named and those that aren't named. But everything else we made sure was back in the bill. However, we did take into account the concerns from Senate leadership. We took into account the claims from Attorney General Coster, and you know there were some members of the law enforcement community that had some concerns about the bill, and we addressed those concerns. We can talk about those specifically in just a minute. So, in essence, with respect to the Second Amendment Preservation Act, this version is more powerful because it's cleaner. It's more powerful because of some improved wording. You know, for instance, there's a stronger, better severability clause in this bill. So it has a greater chance of more parts of it surviving court challenges. And there was just some improved wording that just makes it more clear. And, you know, you can go back and you can work on a recipe 10 times, and every time it gets a little bit better. And that's exactly what happened. Although it was a good bill, I think it's even better. It's even more powerful. So the misdemeanor charge for federal officials who come to Missouri and infringe on our right to keep and bear arms, they're still in there. The power of the people to sue an official, whether it's a state or federal official, when they're infringing on their right to keep their arms, it's still in there, and it's not diminished in any way. You know, those were the teeth. Those were the two most important things.
Exactly.
The one thing, you know, I'm going to kind of start at the end. The one thing that I've been getting the most pushback on was an idea from Senate leadership, and I think on evaluation, it's an excellent idea, and that is a delayed effective date with a contingency. Everybody, including myself, when they first look at that, they say, that's a bad idea. Why do we want to wait to enact our Second Amendment Preservation Act? Well, here's why. Number of reasons. Number one, we know that what we're doing is a very radical thing. We're telling the federal government to go take a hike, take a long walk on a short pier. That's not done very often. As you pointed out, we've got some states that are doing that with medical marijuana, and I guess maybe just plain recreational marijuana now in the case of Colorado and Washington. But not very often do states just tell the federal government, we're going to do what we want in spite of what you say. So that's a radical thing to do. And one of the reasons that they're getting away with it in the case of medical marijuana is a lot of states are doing the same thing.
Right.
The more states that make a stand like this, the easier it is for the states to prevail over the federal government.
Right.
So the Senate leadership team decided that we could do, you know, we could leverage the power of the other states if we said that this became law when four other states enact similar legislation. Okay. However, nobody wanted to depend on four other states doing it. By the way, you've already got Kansas and Alaska who arguably have done something very similar. So it could be we just need two more states. But nobody wanted to rely on two or four more states adopting something like the Second Amendment Preservation Act. So there's a drop-dead date, and in this case, it's January 1st, 2017. Well, why January 1st, 2017? Well, you know when the term for our current Attorney General expires?
2016?
Well,
2018.
He'll go through 2016.
Right.
So at the beginning of 2017, you know, when this bill becomes effective, we'll have a new AG. Now, if you remember, it was Attorney General Chris Koster who published the red herring letter
right.
that really caused 436 to see a hard way to go at the veto override session. If you remember, our current Attorney General, Chris Koster, is the one that said, I'm not going to defend this bill, even though that's his job.
Right.
It's the Attorney General's job to defend. He said, I'm not going to defend it. So do we really want to see this bill become law? Do we really want to see this bill face the court with the attorney representing the bill saying publicly already in advance he doesn't like it and he's not going to support it? So we want a new attorney general by the time
right.
this bill hits the courts. So that's an incredibly important reason to delay it. So there's two other factors with respect to that effective date contingency clause. One of them is that you know we were facing criticism by people saying, well, there's some laws, gun control laws that are good gun control laws in federal law that we don't have duplicated in state law. And nobody can tell us what they are, but they make the claims that they're there. Because, you know, you can't – Missouri law says you can't own a machine gun. Federal law says
right.
you can't own a machine gun. You know, for instance, Missouri law says you can't own a destructive device. Federal law says you can't own a destructive device. So the thing is that there really is – when the Second Amendment Preservation Act becomes law, it's not like you're all of a sudden going to be able to go out and buy bazookas and machine guns. That's just not true. But the opponents – of this bill have been saying that there are things in federal law that aren't replicated in state law, and if we pass this bill, then all of a sudden the floodgates will be open for all kinds of bad things. Well, if the bill's passed in 2014 and it doesn't take effect until the end of 2016, then there's two legislative sessions for them to identify those things and try to pass bills to plug any holes that are left know, by the passage of the Second Amendment Preservation Act. So what we do with that is we disarm the opponent's most nebulous argument. But we do all that without leaving the people unprotected, because another element of the contingency clause says that if the federal government enacts any new laws, whether it's a bill, an executive order, or anything else, that infringes on the rights to keep and bear arms. So let's say that next month they pass an assault weapons ban. Let's say the month after this Second Amendment Preservation Act is passed, they enact an assault weapon ban. Immediately, the Second Amendment Preservation Act becomes law and it takes effect.
Correct.
We don't have to wait for the other states. We don't have to wait for 2017. Immediately. So we're no worse off between the time it passes and between the time it becomes effective.
Correct. The mechanism is there, even though the bill has these other two provisions, the mechanism is there for this bill to become effective immediately if it will infringe upon the rights of Missouri citizens.
Right. If another federal law is passed
infringing
on the rights, then Senate Bill 613, assuming it's passed in Missouri, becomes effective immediately. We don't wait for that effective date, the delayed effective date. So the thing is, it's just good politics. It's just smart, wise politics. And it disarms our opponents. It gives us a strong position, and we really aren't giving anything away.
That's right. Okay, folks, now listen up, because we're going to move into what is arguably, in my mind, the most important part of this show for you, the listener. Ron, what can we do to help you out right now?
Well, the thing that people can do right this moment is go to mofirst.org and then click on the link that says SAPA or Second Amendment Preservation Act resource page, and there you'll see a way for you to fill out an online witness form. There's a schedule for the hearing. Oh, let me back up just a minute. The hearings for this bill already been scheduled. This is early in the session, and they've already been scheduled. Senator Nieves, who sponsors the bill, chairs the General Laws Committee in the Senate, and he's already earmarked his next two hearing days, January 21st, that's this coming Tuesday, and the following Tuesday, January 28th, to have two full sessions to hear this bill. And that's, again, part of the strategy. He's going to make sure that anybody that has any opposition to this bill, and supporters too, have ample opportunity to weigh in. And let's not have any more bombs dropped at the last minute. Let's make sure that anybody that's got an interest in this bill has an opportunity to vet the bill, air their concerns, and nobody can claim that it snuck up on them. So we want to be prepared for these hearings. That means that we need people to plan to take off work, go to the hearings on the 21st and the 28th, or if you can't do that, go to mofirst.org, go to the SAPA resource page, click on the witness form page for Senate Bill 613, and fill out an online witness form. We'll print that witness form. We'll hand deliver it to the committee. We want to take hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of witness forms to show them that the people of Missouri still care about their Second Amendment.
Okay, so that's mofirst.org, listeners, M-O-F-I-R-S-T. That's all one word with no underscores or fancy characters, mofirst.org. Click on the SAPA witness form. You're gonna then be presented with a PDF file. It's going to have the date already filled out for you. It's going to have the committee already filled out for you. It's going to have the bill number already filled out for you. I believe mine even had my name already filled out for me. I can't remember if I filled that out or not.
If you've used the witness forms in the past,
Yes.
Then it'll automatically fill out your name and address, and so all you've got to do is write comments. And please write comments, because
right.
we also have a mechanism by which we can put those comments in front of the committee and, you know, keep them brief. If you write 2 pages, they're not going to read it. But if you write a paragraph or two, you know, a short paragraph or two, they'll read them, and it will make an impression.
I'm gonna read you listeners what I wrote the other day when I wrote my witness form. It is time for states to take responsibility for their own sovereignty. There's no better vehicle for this statement than the Second Amendment Preservation Act. The Constitution specifically prohibits the federal government from making any laws that impact the sovereignty of the great state of Missouri in allowing and protecting her citizens to keep and bear arms. I call on you to hold the line on the encroachments of the federal government, take your responsibility to the citizens of Missouri seriously, and pass this legislation without delay. Be very, very polite. Don't stomp your feet. And don't call down the members of the committee for not doing what they but firmly call on them to do the right thing here, and then sign thank you and your name. It needs to be
Dave, Ron. That was wonderful. Just the perfect length, to the point. They'll read that. It's not so long they won't read. But there's one problem. You use the fatal words, without delay. Haven't you heard? Haven't you heard that the governor has a little different idea about what it means without delay than the rest of us do?
And let's be realistic, folks. Like I've already alluded to in this show, this is going to pass the Senate. This bill is going to pass the House. It's incumbent upon you, the voter, the citizen of the state, to reread this thing every time it passes a level, see what amendments have been added, see what's been done, but let's don't fool ourselves. The governor is going to veto this, and we're going to see this. We're going to have Ron back here asking you for another witness form two or three times.
Well, actually, I think you might, maybe you haven't heard. I'll give you a kind of another interesting side story. You know, one of the things that that's transpired since the veto override session is the governor has made a couple of appointments. You know, Representative Jason Smith. I'm sorry?
Appointments with his psychiatrist? No, go ahead.
I wish he'd do that. Now, if you remember, you know, Representative Jason Smith
right.
ran for Congress and he won.
Right.
And so what was a veto-proof majority with one extra in the Missouri House of Representatives became just barely a veto-proof majority.
That's
and
right.
So for the Republicans, I'm saying.
That's
and,
right.
And then the governor appointed Representative Fowler from the southeast part of the state to the parole board, and so basically he picked off another Republican. And you know, and party politics aside, the fact of the matter is that generally Republicans are more predisposed to override a veto of a Democrat governor and vice versa. And so right now, there's one fewer Republicans than it takes to override the governor's veto in the House of Representatives. And so 11 Missouri citizens sued the governor saying, by now, you should have called a special election. He's the only one that can call a special election to fill these
right.
Empty legislative seats. And right now there's three rep seats and one Senate seat that are open. And the Missouri law says that the governor, when he's been notified of a vacancy, shall issue a writ of election without delay. That's what it says, quote, without delay. That's why I was kind of
yeah,
I was kidding you.
I get that now. Right.
So we don't want them to use the governor's definition of without delay to pass this legislation without delay. We want them to use the common meaning of without delay.
That's right.
So, the point is that these guys are slimy. You know,
oh,
I mean,
yes.
The Constitution says the governor's supposed to issue a writ of election. The statute says he's supposed to do it without delay. And for 7 months, the people of Jason Smith's old district have gone unrepresented.
That's right.
You know, they just and, they just ignore the law when it's not convenient for them.
And we have, by the way, listeners, a Senate bill and a House bill addressing that issue. We'll be getting into that here in the next couple of weeks as well, to kind of define for this governor and future governors exactly what without delay means. So here we go with these. With these witness forms, and tell the listeners one more time what you do with these forms, Ron.
Well, you know, understand that by law, every bill, before it can go to the floor for the House or the Senate to debate it, has to have a public hearing. Every single bill has got to have a public hearing. In fact, it's got to have two public hearings, because once it passes the House or the Senate, it goes over to the other chamber, the House or the Senate, and they have to have another hearing over there. And so there's at least two opportunities for the public to sit face-to-face, toe-to-toe with legislators and tell them why they like a bill or why they don't like a bill. You normally, in the past, you've had to go to Jefferson City to do that. You'd either have to go there and speak, or you could go there and get a witness form and just hand them the witness form without actually speaking to them. And that witness, and on that witness form, there's a place for you to write testimony. Preferably it's a paragraph about the size that you wrote, but sometimes longer is called for depending on the situation, and that witness form then is given to the committee. It actually ends up going into the state archives as part of the Missouri history, so it goes into part of the permanent record, and so since most good Missourians have jobs, they're working, and they can't just go up to Jeff City on a whim in the middle of the week, they can't always participate in these hearings. And so what we've done is we've created an online system where they can go and fill out a witness form. It prints and looks exactly like the form that you would have filled out at the Capitol, only, of course, your replies are typewritten instead of handwritten in it, which makes it easier to read. And we'll print those, and we hand-deliver those to the committee. We make a presentation. In fact, sometimes we have fun with it because it's maybe a 7-inch stack of these papers, hundreds and hundreds of them, and we don't usually set them down gently. We usually let them kind of plop on the table for effect. And that makes an impression on them, and then we'll print a map, and it's a Google map showing where each one of those witness forms came from all across the state.
Great,
and these guys know that you're watching.
Okay, that's MoFirst, MoFirst.org. It's the SAPA witness form. It's right there on the front, and we want to try with this show to add 100 to Ron's stack. So you folks, during this break and while you're listening, get on there, MoFirst, MoFirst.org. We're going to take this break. We're going to try to hold Ron over for about 2 or 3 more minutes of his time after the break. So just so I give you folks one last chance at 347-677-1835, 347-677-1835 while we have this patriot with us. We'll be right back.
We have never invested as much in public education as we should have, because we've always had kind of a private notion of children. Your kid is yours and totally your responsibility. We haven't had a very collective notion of these are our children. So part of it is we have to break through our kind of private idea that kids belong to their parents or kids belong to their families and recognize that kids belong to whole communities.
You wrote the book with a movie in mind.
Can you talk if you haven't got a brain?
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
Have you joined Missouri Grassroots Coalition yet? The results of the 2012 election proved that the grassroots conservatives need to work harder to make their voices heard in government. The best way for Missouri conservatives to make their voices heard is to join together within the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Network and show our elected that we are a strong, unified, conservative voice in Missouri. go to the website, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and click on the Join tab. Give us your contact information so that we can keep you updated on the latest developments in Jefferson City and beyond. Also, sign up for grass fire alerts so that you can get immediate notifications when we need to call grassroots conservatives together in action. Use the MGC network to help your grassroots organization speak with a louder voice, combined with grassroots groups across the state. Together, we can strengthen the conservative voice in Missouri.
They told me that you had gone totally insane. And that your methods were unsound. Are my methods unsound? I didn't see any method at all.
Alrighty, we're back. Ron, thanks for being with us. We're going to hold on to you for a couple more minutes so callers get a chance if they want to call 347-677-1835. But we're wrapping up here. So I appreciate, I know everybody listening appreciates everything you do every day. And I want to get one more great big thank you in before we go.
Well, I sure appreciate the support. You know, The thing is that it's not just me. There's a lot of people now that are going up to the Jefferson City on a regular basis, and they're engaged, and we're getting things done. I am more optimistic about our potential than I've ever been in the 15 years I've been doing this.
Great. I join you in that optimism. I was a little over-optimistic last time around, but we saw small gains. I think we're seeing small gains yearly, even in non-election years, we're seeing small gains. I'm looking for some gains in 2014. I want us all to get to a point where, as I've said 100 times, where the federal government is put back in its box, and where all of this glamour that's associated with these every 4-year elections becomes something that just don't distract us anymore, because we have finally reached a point where the federal government is exactly what the founders intended for it to be, and that is totally inconsequential to our day-to-day lives. When we can reach that point, then these every 4-year elections will become less rock star affairs and less expensive and less divisive, because it will be right here in the state of Missouri where the laws are made that really have an impact on us, and right here at a level where we can control. All right, it's the Second Amendment Preservation Act. It's SB 613 at senate.mo.gov. It's Ron Calzone from Missouri First at mofirst.org. Ron, as always, I consider you a great friend. I consider you a great patriot, and I consider it my honor to have been chatting with you for the last hour and 15 minutes. I really mean that with all my heart.
Well, it's my honor to be serving in the trench with you. I think that with you and hundreds of other patriots like you across the state, staying engaged, we can't help but win.
Thank you very much, and all power to the great Show Me State. We'll see you later.
Have a great evening.
Good night, Ron. Okay, that, ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, was Ron Calzone. You won't meet a finer guy. You won't meet a more sincere patriot And you won't meet a person who works harder day in and day out for what we're here for tonight, and that is the sovereignty of the great state of Missouri. Some things have been talked about tonight, and there's some things that some of you will agree with. There's some things that some of you won't agree with, and that's all right. That's what it's all about. I want to take the last little segment here and dive into something that we got into again today in some discussions I was having. You know, we talk a lot. We throw the word state sovereignty around. We throw it around all the time like it means something, and it does. We throw it around all the time like we mean it, and I hope we do. But I want us, once again, to go over an understanding of exactly what that means. We, and I say we, I'm a libertarian. I know Ron is staunch conservative. I have lots of friends who are staunch conservatives, and I have lots of friends who are staunch libertarians. We are not anarchists. We don't believe that everybody gets to make the rules themselves that to guide their own lives. We believe there is a need for government. You know, and I'm going to go ahead and use the examples that I use every time. You know, we don't believe that people can set up a M60 on their front porch. We don't believe people can sit out in their front yard naked. We don't believe, you know, that you can just decide for yourself how fast you want to drive down Interstate 44. We believe that someone, as a representative voice of the people of the great state of Missouri, needs to be in a position to make the rules. Somebody needs to be the sovereign. And the argument 250 years ago was, at what level does that sovereignty belong? But do understand that when we relieve the federal government of the sovereignty that they have unconstitutionally seized, and when we deliver that sovereignty back to the state of Missouri, there is still going to be a sovereign power. It's not suddenly going to become every man for himself society. Someone is still going to decide what the rules are, and that someone is your representative in Jefferson City, Missouri. You don't think for a minute that when the federal government is gone, is put back in its box where it belongs, when there's no more EPA, when there's no more FDA, when there's no more Department of Education, that all of a sudden someone's not going to have to be able to tell you that you can't dump poison in the Mississippi River? You don't believe that there's not going to have to be somewhere, someone telling you that you can't sell snake oil down in the Central Square as a cure for cancer? Certainly, that sovereignty is going to exist. The idea, once more, is to house that sovereignty at a level where the person making laws is directly controlled by the people, where the guy or woman who's voting on whether or not you can open carry without a CCW permit is the same man or woman you see in the grocery store, you see at the Rotary Club, you see at church, you see walking down the street, and the person who welcomes you by name when you walk into their office in Jefferson City. That's the level where we want those kind of rules made, the level where people care about you and you care about what they're doing. So that's what state sovereignty is all about. That's what the state sovereignty series is all about. We welcome you now. The phone lines are open. The discussion is free now at 347-677-1835, 347-677-1835. It's free speech for the next 15 minutes or so until we log out for the evening. I want to get in the admin stuff here while you're deciding whether or not you want to call. Missouri Grassroots Coalition Radio is brought to you by Missouri Grassroots Coalition. We have myself, the Hour of Truth, currently in the State Sovereignty series on Friday nights and Saturday nights. On Tuesday nights, Cynthia Davis comes along. Cynthia Davis has a great show every Tuesday night at 7 o'clock. She has great guests. Cynthia is a strong promoter of family values, of the unit that holds America together, the family unit, and is a watchdog on assaults on that building block of America. Then on Tuesday night, Lisa Payne Nager comes along. Lisa is the culture vigilante. She is a guardian of the conservative culture. She has great guests in shorter segments. It's a different kind of show, but it's just as exciting. It's just as fun. Then I'll be back again on Friday of next week and Saturday of next week. The week after next, on Friday night, I have a commitment, so I'm going to replay my interview with Mike Moon, who represented the great state of Missouri at the Convention of the States rally at Washington's home, Mount Vernon. And then before we take a quick break and then come back and wrap up, I want to make an appeal to you to go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org tonight. Every year we start in January with our Secret Santa promo. We start in January so that you don't get caught up by us coming to you to beg for money at the end of the year when it's hardest. So January through November, December, we run the Secret Santa. And it's the only money that Missouri Grassroots Coalition collects. We don't collect dues. We don't collect donations. We don't collect anything else except for this one cause, our Secret Santa, every December. And we collect for it all year so that you can make it easy on yourself when you want to give. You can make it easy on yourself if you want to give two or three times during the year in smaller amounts. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, click on the Secret Santa button, and use PayPal to send us a couple of bucks. Missouri Grassroots Coalition is a broad-based coalition of conservative and libertarian grassroots groups. We invite you to join us at the Facebook page, Missouri Grassroots Coalition. And I do that with this in mind, okay? Ron Calzone, the guy you talked to tonight. Keith Carmichael, the guy you talked to last night. I'm just going to throw out some names here. I'm not going to forget or intentionally grab anyone. Dave Plemons, Missouri Right to Life. Gretchen Logue, the Missouri Education Watchdog. These are people who spend their time following these issues for you, specific issues. They follow all the legislation. They follow all the happenings. They follow everything that's going on there. And what they do is just once or twice a day, and their busy day of keeping an eye on the government for you, they drop in at Missouri Grassroots Coalition and they leave a little blurb about how things are going. What's happening with the Second Amendment Preservation Act? What's happening with Common Core? What's happening with Missouri Right to Life, with MoSIRA's rearing its ugly head again this year? We'll be talking to Dave soon. What's happening with these things? And that's why it's important for you to go there, because you can't, you don't have the time. I mean, you work, you have a family, you have a house to take care of. You can't spend all of your time keeping up with all of these issues, but these people do that for you. So go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and stay abreast of all the work that these great people are doing for you. On Facebook, that's Missouri Grassroots Coalition. It's also Missouri Grassroots on Twitter. I'm going to take a break. 347-677-1835. I'm going to come back from this break, and if nobody wants to talk, we're going to wrap up for the night.
The emergency destruct system is now activated.
No matter what time of year it is, it's never too early to start preparing for the holidays. And here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we're thinking of Christmas now. Why? Because we've set an ambitious goal for ourselves to raise $2,000. That's right, we want to raise $2,000 in 2013 to help some Missouri families who may be struggling in this Obama economy to provide a magical Christmas morning for their children. Last year, in 2012, Missouri Grassroots Coalition touched the lives of 15 families because of the generosity of conservatives across the state who provided us with the means to pay off their layaway accounts on Christmas Eve. This year, we'd like to be able to help twice that number of families, and we're asking you to help us with that goal. Please go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on the Secret Santa tab. All the details are there for you to send us what you can by PayPal, check, or money order. We want to thank all who contributed last year for their generosity and hope that you will all help us continue to prove that charitable giving works best in a constitutional republic.
Is life so dear or peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God! I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
About 250 years ago, some men, yes, they were all men, I'm sorry, ladies, it was a different day, met in Philadelphia to try to decide what power had to be bestowed on this central authority. And they very, very, very carefully and with jealousy for the sovereignty of their states decided what specific powers were going to be given to this new federal government. They restricted those powers, and they specifically delineated some things that that federal government could not do. And at the end of that document, they decided that they needed to put in a caveat that demanded that every power, every specific power that they had not enumerated and delegated to the central authority belonged first to the states and then respectively to the people. We've come a long way from there, folks. A long, long way. And it's time to fight and scratch our way back. The best way we can do that is with a convention of the states and a series of amendments to the Constitution derived from the states, from the power of the people, to put this federal monster back in its box, to strip the federal government of the unwarranted power that it has seized. The first, in my mind, most important amendment that needs to come out of this Convention of the States is a repeal, just a total repeal of the 17th Amendment. We need to return to a day when the United States Senate served at the interest and will of the state. No longer serving the people. The people have their house. The state has no representation in Washington, D.C. at this time. The second most important amendment that needs to come out of this convention is the state repeal amendment. We've talked to Lloyd Sloan 2 weeks ago about that for 2 hours. We'll talk to him again in the near future. He's been up to Jeff City pushing the state repeal amendment. If you don't know what it is, go find that show and listen to Lloyd, the expert on the state repeal amendment, SRA. The third important amendment that needs to come out of that convention is repeal of the 16th Amendment and the institution at the same time and in the same amendment of the fair tax. Those three things, my friends, will go almost all the way to the goal line of restoring state sovereignty and putting the federal government back where it belongs. Stay with us week after week after week here on Friday and Saturday nights as we continue to bring you updates, to try to keep you in the loop, to try to help you help yourself in this worthwhile goal. We'll be back next Friday and Saturday night with a continuation of the series on state sovereignty. Until then, God bless you all.
God bless America, land.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.